जाया कुंड बिहारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभा, जय गिरिवरदारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभा, जय गिरिवरदारी। जय यशोदनन्तना, जय व्रजजनरञ्जना। जय यशोदनन्तना, जय व्रज जन रंजना। जय यमुना तीरवनचारी, जय कुंज बिहारी। जय यमुना तीरवनचारी, जय कुंज बिहारी। हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा, कृष्णा कृष्णा हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम, राम राम हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा, कृष्णा कृष्णा हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम, राम राम हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा, कृष्णा कृष्णा हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम, राम राम हरे हरे। Thank you. जय राधा माधव जय कुंज बिहारी
इस डिवाइन ग्रेस ऐसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, 22nd chapter, text 49. Thank you. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, 22nd chapter, text 49.
Sunita Satyajit Atha Vishwajit Yat Ripunajaya Bhargatratasya Bhupala भाव्यासगस्य वत्सरम् सुनीता सत्यजित् अथ विश्वजित् यत् रिपुनज। विश्वजित् यत् रिपुनजयाम् बर्हाद्रताश्च भूपाला भाव्य सगश वत्सरम् सुनीता सत्यजित् अथ विश्वजित् यत् रिपुञ्जया बर्हाद्रताश्च भूपाला भाव्यासगस्य वत्सरम्।
Sunita.
From Subala will come Sunita. Satyajit. Satyajit. Atha. From him. Vishwajit. From Vishwajit. Yat. From whom? Ripunjaya. Ripunjaya. Bhargadrataha. All in the line of Bhargadrata. Cha. Also. Bhupala. All those kings. Bhavyaha. Will take birth. Sagarsha Vatsaram. Continuously for 1000 years. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. From Subal will come Sunita. From Sunita, Satyajit. From Satyajit, Vishwajit. And from Vishwajit, Ripunjaya. All of these personalities will belong to the dynasty of Bhargadrata, which will rule the world for 1000 years. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This is the history of a monarchy that began with Jarasandha and continues for 1000 years as the above mentioned kings appear on the surface of the globe. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 9th canto, 22nd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled The Descendants of Ajamita. So we will also read from text 33 onwards the translation. My dear King Parikshit, your father Abhimanyu was born from the womb of Subhadra as the son of Arjuna. He was the conqueror of all Atirathas, those who could fight with 1000 charioteers. From him, by the womb of Uttara, the daughter of Virat Raja, you were born. After the Kuru dynasty was annihilated in the battle of Kurukshetra, you also were about to be destroyed by the Brahmastra atomic weapon released by the son of Dronacharya. But by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, you are saved from death. My dear King, your four sons, Janmejaya, Surutsena, Bhimasena and Ugrasena are very powerful. Janmejaya is the eldest. Because of your death by the Takshaka snake, your son Janmejaya will be very angry and will perform a sacrifice to kill all the snakes in the world. After conquering throughout the world and after accepting Tura, the son of Kalasha, as his priest, Janmejaya will perform Ashwamedha Yajnas, for which he will be known as Turaga Medashat. The son of Janmejaya, known as Satanika, will learn from Yajnavakya the three Vedas and the art of performing ritualistic ceremonies. He will also learn the military art from Kripacharya and the transcendental science from the sage Shanaka. The son of Satanika will be Sagashranika, and from him will come the son named Ashwamedhaja. From Ashwamedhaja will come Ashimakrishna, and his son will be Nemichakra. When the town of Hastinapur, New Delhi, is inundated by the river, Nemichakra will live in a place known as Kaushambi. His son will be celebrated as Chitrarata. The son of Chitrarata will be Suchirata. From Suchirata will come the son named Vristiman. And his son Sushena will be the emperor of the entire world. The son of Sushena will be Sunita. His son will be Nirukchakshu. And from Nirukchakshu will come a son named Sukhinala. The son of Sukhinala will be Pariplava, and his son will be
Sunaya. From Sunaya will come a son named Medhavi. From Medhavi, Nirpanjaya. From Nirpanjaya, Durva. And from Durva, Timi. From Timi will come Bhagadrishta. And from Bhagadrishta, Sudasha. And from Sudasa, Satanika. From Satanika will come Durdamana. And from him will come a son named Maginara. The son of Maginara will be Dandapani, and his son will be Nimi. From whom King Shemaka will be born. I have now described to you the moon god's dynasty, which is the source of Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, and is worshipped by the demigods and great saints. In this Kali Yuga, Shmekcha will be the last monarch. Now I shall describe to you the future of Magadha dynasty. Please listen. Sagadeva, the son of Jarasandha, will have a son named Marjari. From Marjari will come Shutashrava, and from Shutashrava Yathayu, and from Yathayu Niramitra. The son of Niramitra will be Shunakshatra. From Shunakshatra will come Bhagatsena, and from Bhagatsena, and from Bhagatsena, Karmajit. The son of Karmajit will be Shutanjaya. The son of Shutanjaya will be Vipra, and his son will be Suchi. The son of Suchi will be Shema. The son of Shema will be Shwaratha, and the son of Shwaratha will be Dharmasutra. From Dharmasutra will come Sama. From Sama, Dhumatsena. From Dhumatsena, Sumati. And from Sumati, Subala. From Subala will come Sunita. From Sunita, Satyajit. From Satyajit, Vishwajit. And from Vishwajit, Ripunjaya. All of these personalities will belong to the dynasty of Brigadrata, which will rule the world for 1,000 years.
Om Ajnanatimurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Shakshonmilutam Yena Tashmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupakatamayam Tatati Shvapatantikam. हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधो दीनबंधो जगतपते गोपेश गोपिका कांत श्री राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी श्री राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये वाञ्छाकल्पतरूपस्य कृपा सिंधुप्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवाशदि गौर भक्तवृंद. हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे. हरे रामा 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 हरे हरे. मुखं करोति वाचालं पंगुं लंगायते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वंदे श्रीगुरुं दीनतारणं.
Seeking the blessings of all the devotees, I think the class is over because we just went through all the names of different personalities. There are a couple of points which we can discuss out of all these verses, but there are so many different points. We will focus on three major points. The first one is how the Lord is saving Maharaj Parikshit. So in different places in the scriptures, the Lord, guarantees that, like, you know, when anybody surrenders to him, he is going to, like, you know, protect them. So here we can see that, like, you know, as it says after the Kuru dynasty, this is text 34. After the Kuru dynasty was annihilated in the battle of Kurukshetra, you were also about to be destroyed by the Brahmastra atomic weapon released by the son of Dronacharya. But by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, you are saved from death. Here the Lord, he personally came to protect Maharaj Parikshit. He entered the womb of Uttara and he protected Maharaj Parikshit from the Brahmastra. And I don't know the exact verse, but in scriptures it is mentioned that if anybody is going to take shelter of the Lord and becomes a pure devotee, the seven generation which is above that devotee and seven generations after that devotee, all of them are like delivered, like at once. They don't even need to do, like, you know, any other endeavor. So here also, like, we can see, anyways, Maharaj Parikshit is also a, like, pure devotee, but he is coming in the succession of, like, you know, all these wonderful, like, pure devotees who are personally serving the Lord. We can see that the Lord, he personally came to protect Maharaj Parikshit. So that gives us like lot of like hope. These are not like, you know, something which the Lord says that just for, like, you know, because it sounds nice. Yes, I will protect you. Please surrender unto me. But he is actually delivering those like promises. But one might ask a question. Here we can see that the Lord, he protected Maharaj Parikshit from the Brahmastra. And he says that now he is going to be protecting the devotee. But how come he did not protect Maharaj Parikshit from the snake bird? He can protect, right? Because he protected him from Brahmastra. But how come he did not protect Maharaj Parikshit when he was, like, you know, about to die by the the snake bird? So that is another thing which we have to contemplate on. So whenever the Lord says he is going to protect, it is not what we might think as the protection. It is not the protection of the material body or wealth or followers and so on and so forth. He protects our devotion. He is going to make sure that we are going to be, like, you know, progressing well in our own devotional service, so that we don't need to be staying in this material world. We will get out of the material world, or even if we are going to be staying within the material world, we are not affected by or influenced by Maya Devi. So that is the protection of the Lord. Though it is a side point, I just wanted to mention this, because as practicing devotees, often we might undergo a lot of setbacks in our own lives. Then we, one might, if our faith is not very strong, we might question, what is this? The Lord says he is going to protect me, but I lost my job, or I lost so and so, or whatever the circumstances might be. He is not protecting me. Is the Lord lying, or is the scriptures not telling the truth? No, the scriptures are telling the truth. Whatever setbacks we might be experiencing, that might be for our own benefit. So whatever the Lord does, he makes sure that, anyone who is even slightly inclined in serving him and rendering devotional service, he creates circumstances in such a manner that they can go closer and closer and closer to him. So that is something for us to, meditate on. So often it is not that the Lord is going to protect all our material, like attachments or material possessions and things like that, he is going to like take away those. The main thing he is guaranteeing is that we are going to be going back, back home, back to Godhead. If anything which is going to come in between that, then he is going to take away those. That's why Queen Kunti, in her, like one of the like famous prayers, she tells, she praises Lord Krishna as Namo Akinchana Vittaya. So he is the Lord of those who are materially impoverished. So the problem with lot of these material possessions is that our dependence on the Lord is going to be decreasing. We will think, oh, I have a lot of wealth, good bank balance or that and this and whatever it is. These are going to be protecting me. I don't need to worry about my future. So when the Lord says that we are going to be we are having all this false dependence, he is going to take away those. So when somebody doesn't have anything material, they don't have any other option than surrendering to the Lord. That's why the Lord is called as he is the Lord of materially impoverished. But we can also see that all these saintly kings, which we have been discussing the names of, they had lot of material opulence. They had so much of material opulence, but still they were pure devotees. They were pure devotees. So that is another protection of the Lord. If someone is qualified, the Lord will give them all the material amenities needed for taking care of a particular service. If the material wealth is needed for taking care of a particular service, he is going to be providing that. But he is not going to be randomly giving things to devotees. He wants to make sure that we are not going to be foregoing our main dependence on the Lord. So he will make sure that he gives based on our own needs, in essence. So he is not going to be unnecessarily giving things which is going to take us away from him. So that is the protection of the Lord. So that is the first point I wanted to discuss. The second point, actually it has two subparts, is how we can see here that the last purport, it says, this is the history of a monarchy that began with Jarasandha and continues for 1000 years as the above mentioned kings appear on the surface of the globe. So it is giving some specific deadline. They are going to be lasting only for 1000 years, this particular line of kings. Let's see why it is only for 1000 years. As we discussed so far in this particular canto, there are so many different saintly kings are listed. And as the as we discussed in some of this text, we are looking at the injunction of Kali Yuga. So one particular, the Moon dynasty, it ended, and then the next dynasty started. Now Kali Yuga had already begun. The symptom of Kali Yuga is that people are not going to be having all these characteristics which are needed. So in the previous yugas, the kings, they come in a particular dynasty. So there is a king, as we again discussed here, it says so-and-so's son is so-and-so, and this person's son is so-and-so. So everything is based on seminal lineage. But at the same time, from Bhagavad Gita and other scriptures, we do see that one gets
one holds a particular post like king based on qualification, not based on birth. But this, the lineage of saintly kings, because they know their duty is to train their children to take the post of the king, then what they do? They make sure that they follow all the scriptural injunctions. Like for example, before begetting children, they will perform the different sacrifices, garbhadana samskara, and all those to make sure that they are going to be attracting a soul which is qualified to be a king. So they don't have unrestricted sense enjoyment. So they undergo lot of sacrifices before begetting children. And they look at proper time and that and this and what not. So many things which goes into that. And once they beget the children, so even when the child is in the womb of the mother, the child is going to be trained. The child will be hearing about the pastimes of the Lord. And once the child is delivered, again the child will be undergoing so many different purificatory rituals. So many different samskaras. All these samskaras, these are called as samskaras literally mean impressions. The child is going to be having these impressions. The child is going to be always hearing about the Lord and hearing about the nature of virtue, how one has to be virtuous, how the king has to be considering all the prajas. Kings are called as prajapatis. So they have to consider all the prajas are their subject as their own, sons and daughters. They need to consider them as their own sons and daughters. So if you look at a mother and father, they take care of their children so nicely. Similarly, the kings, they are supposed to take care of all the living entities who are inhabitants of that particular land, as if they are their own children. So when you say living entities, we are not just meaning that it has to be just humans, even the animals. So animals and other living and plants, they have to take care of each and every living entity. So this particular culture is imbibed on these children from the young age. So they become qualified. They become qualified, then they inherit the throne. So it is not that somebody is born to the king, they will automatically inherit the kingdom. So they need to be qualified. But the chance of someone becoming very qualified in that particular lineage, because of all the things which goes into effect, from begetting the children to training, make sure that these kings are qualified enough. So that is one of the important thing which we can apply in our own lives as well as practicing devotees. So if you see here, we saw that both qualification and training, they are needed for making sure that a particular lineage of kings is going to be going on for a long period of time. Why it stopped after 1,000 years? Because the kings, they were not qualified. They were not qualified. So that's why the lineage stopped. If you look at the current system of democracy, often Srila Prabhupada calls democracy as demoncracy, because we don't have any qualification which is needed to rule the country. For example, if you want to be an accountant, if you go on work in even a small company, they will ask you for what kind of degree you have. like, you know, do your bachelor's in accountancy or like finance or whatever it is. So they will look for those kind of qualifications. But for you to become the secretary of finance, I don't know whether there is something as secretary of finance. Let's say there is secretary of finance or finance minister. Even a person who is so illiterate doesn't have, like, you know, any training about finance, they can become finance ministers. And a person who doesn't even know anything about, like, agriculture can become the minister of agriculture or secretary of agriculture. That is the modern system. Nobody, or I don't want to say like nobody, most of the people, they don't have any proper qualification. Anyways, most of the things which we discussed about are skill sets. But we are mainly talking about the qualities. Is the person like humble, compassionate, honest? These are the qualities which we need to have. If we are going to be taking any kind of leadership role, we need to be cultivating these qualities. If you don't do those, then what is going to happen? Everything is going to stop. So as we can see in this particular chapter, all the lineage of kings, it just stopped because they were not having proper qualification and they were not undergoing proper training. So as practicing devotees, we can see that both these qualifications and training, they are really essential for us to continue our disciplic succession. If all of us are going to be thinking, oh, like, you know, everything is fine, like, you know, we don't need to do this, there are, like, you know, like more advanced devotees, they will take on, carry on the mission of Srila Prabhupada. If each and every person is going to think like that, then what is going to, like, happen? So that's why it is, like, you know, for each one, every one of us, we need to take the training very seriously. And especially, like, you know, in terms of developing the qualities, the Vaishnava qualities, we need to, like, you know, constantly strive to develop these qualities and undergo training. That is the only way we can make sure that the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is going to be continuing. And we do know that, like, you know, Srila Prabhupada said, his books are going to be guidebooks for, like, you know, another, like, 10,000 years. So we know that for another at least 10,000 years, everything is going to be nice. The facilities for spreading Krishna consciousness is going to be, like, in a very, very high. But we need to utilize those. So if all of us are going to be taking a lackadaisical approach, yeah, like, it's fine. Because the Lord says that I'm going to be preserving whatever you have. Maybe, like, you know, even if I'm not going to be completing, even if I'm not going to become a perfect devotee in this lifetime, it is fine. I will take, like, another 100 lifetimes, 1,000 lifetimes. What is the big deal? When compared to the eternity, so 1,000 lifetimes or 10,000 lifetimes is nothing, right? So, like that, often we might think, oh, like, you know, it is not a big deal. So let's take it, like, in a little easy. So that whenever we have that kind of mentality, that is the one which is going to hinder our, like, progress. So that is going to be detrimental. So this is something, like, you know, like, which we can learn and apply in our own lives. And the final point I wanted to make is that how Srimad Bhagavatam and other scriptures, they don't have, you will not find in any place in the scriptures where the scriptures are going to say, oh, like, you know, the son of so and so might be this, or he might change his mind and maybe, like, he has a daughter indeed. So that might be the name of the daughter. Like that, there is no ambiguity. Everything is, like, crystal clear. Here, Maharaj Parikshit is the one who is hearing everything And he was told, okay, this is going to be, these are your, like, you know, all these your sons, and then one of your son, Janamejaya, is going to be doing like all these sacrifices to take revenge for, like, you know, because the snake bird bit you. He, like, you know, goes through, like, you know, like, he is hearing even the dynasty which is coming after him, like, you know, his sons and son of his sons and grandsons, great grandsons, and so on and so forth. So there is, like, you know, no, like, ambiguity within the scriptures. So in essence, all the knowledge we are receiving from scriptures, they are, like, you know, perfect. There is not even a tinge of ambiguity. If we think there is some ambiguity, the ambiguity is in our mind, because we are not processing them, like, properly. So that is, like, you know, the final point, like, I wanted to make, that, you know, like, we need to take shelter of the scriptures, because they are not only talking about whatever happened in the past, they talk about whatever is happening at present and whatever is going to happen in the future. So scriptures are, like, you know, trikalagya. So they know, they talk about past, present and future. And we can literally see whatever is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam about Kali Yuga. We can literally see, like, you know, people are really dull-headed and short-lived and so on and so forth. Everything we can see, like, how in this age there is, like, you know, lot of quarrel. Even something which is seemingly so simple, people fight over that. For unnecessary reason, like, we fight, like, that everything which is mentioned in the scriptures, we can see, like, you know, like, how it is true. So by looking at or by reading these pastimes, we need to, like, you know, if our consciousness is correct, our faith in scripture is going to be strengthened more and more. Otherwise, we might be thinking, what is this? Okay, so-and-so's son is so-and-so. So what? Like, you know, that might be, like, you know, like, our, like, often the mentality. But we need to, like, you know, like, understand the, like, deeper, like, meaning. So how the scriptures are, like, you know, talking about the past, present and the future. So that means everything which is mentioned in the scriptures is, like, true, because we are hearing from the bona fide source. In a sense, like, you know, everything is directly coming from Krishna. And Krishna is the Param Satyam, is the absolute truth. So anything which is coming from him should also be absolute truth. So all the Vedic knowledge, it doesn't change based on time, place and circumstance. It always remains the same. So that is the final point, like, you know, let us take shelter of the scriptures, and whatever message the scriptures are providing us, so let us, like, you know, take them to our heart and follow them. So these are the three, like, points I wanted to like, make. Let us stop here and see whether there are, like, any questions or comments, suggestions, corrections.
Krishna. Thank you. I was hearing that when you're saying that how Krishna doesn't protect Maharaj Parikshit, and then you gave example that Krishna, protection of definition according to Krishna is not saving a material body, but saving your devotional service. And I was reading this section from Bhagavatam previously, and I just want to share how Maharaj Parikshit is looking at this situation. So Maharaj Parikshit say that Krishna came in front of him in two ways. First, in the curse of the Sringi, the Brahmin boy. And second, in the form of the sages of Naimisharanya, who came, and Sukadeva Goswami, who came in front of him to discuss Krishna Katha. So that's the vision of Maharaj Parikshit, that how he's taking this situation.
Thank you, Prabhu. You're very beautiful.
That's a nice point, but I want to add, actually, the main reason is that Krishna tolerates everything, except offenses. So here we can see, although Parikrita Maharaj was saved by Krishna himself in the womb of Atu, his mother Uttara, but same time, since he did some offense to a sage, you know, who was in transcendental meditation, he's in trance. So we can see, although he was protected by Krishna, but because of his offense, Krishna didn't look at him to save. This is the main reason, because of his offenses. So even when also I remember one times one some one devotee, he said in class here in this temple that we are just like, I think Chandramouli Maharaj, yes. So he said that we are just like flies, you know, in the body of Krishna. So just like how, you know, when one fly is sitting on your body, how you do? Just do like this and wave your hand and it goes away, like that. Similarly, we are like that. So when Krishna wants, you know, he can within 1 second, fraction of 1 second, he can fly you out from his devotional service, from his protection, everything, according to your, you know, status of your status quo of your devotional service. Yeah, you told you have a devotional service, but offense is very important.
Yeah, thank you, Prabhu. Yeah, definitely, like, you know, we need to be very careful not committing offenses, but at the same time, Parikshit Maharaj, being a, like, you know, like a pure devotee, so we cannot judge his actions based on externalities. So the Lord, he orchestrates different things for the benefit of like people in general. If Parikshit Maharaj was not cursed, if he did not take shelter of the sages, and we will not have Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Lord, like, you know, in Srimad Bhagavatam itself says, like, you know, when the Lord disappeared from this world, all the religious principles and everything which we need to get out of this material world is presented in Srimad Bhagavatam. So a lot of times the pure devotees, they will put themselves into situations for the benefit of others. So that is the major, like, you know, reason. It is not because of like offenses and things like that, because like when you are a pure devotee, when you are under complete shelter of the Lord, the power of pure devotion is that it is going to, like, you know, burn into ashes everything, all the anarthas, including the anarthas coming out of like offenses. Even at the beginning stages of devotional service is so powerful that it can get rid of lot of those anarthas. But obviously, out of all the anarthas, offending devotees is the gravest. So we need to be like very careful. But with Parikshit Maharaj's case, there are like a lot of other things. So that's why it is not a like very good idea for us to overanalyze things. Why something might have happened, maybe this is the reason why it happened. Especially when it comes to like pure devotees, we should not like speculate, because pure devotees, their senses are directly controlled by the Lord. Arjuna is not like somebody who is going to be like, you know, like so weak-hearted. But the Lord put him in that situation so that he can speak Bhagavad Gita for our own benefit. Similarly, he put Parikshit Maharaj in a particular situation so that he is going to be acting in a particular manner so that we get the benefit of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. So like that, the Lord, whatever he does, and the pure devotees, whatever they do, it has a particular reason. So often, like, you know, like it doesn't do any justice for us to like over like analyze things. But your point of not committing offense is like, you know, true. Like, you know, we should be very careful not to commit offense against like anybody, especially the devotees. I think like last okay, the question is, what do we mean by pure devotees?
Yeah, like
So, anyways, there can be, we can define it in different manner. The simplest possible definition is a pure devotee has, like, you know, his intention is our intention is pure, meaning that what is that intention? I am part and parcel of the Lord. I need to serve Him unconditionally. If that intention is pure, then that person is a pure devotee. And I might, like, you know, one might say that yes, I will surrender to the Lord, but my intention are not that pure. I'm like, okay, what happens if there is some little possibility that there is Lord Krishna is not the supreme? Maybe Lord Shiva is the supreme. Let me, like, you know, worship Lord Shiva. Or maybe, like, you know, maybe there is no God. Let me just enjoy some material life, like, you know, here also, just in case. Let me put, like, you know, instead of putting all the eggs in one basket, let me try to put eggs in different baskets so that I get benefit of everything. In case if Lord Krishna is the supreme, I get, like, you know, he is pleased. Maybe if Lord Shiva is the supreme, like, I get that benefit. In case if there are no supremes, so I just, like, you know, enjoy, like, you know, having my own sense gratification. So that is what, like, you know, when a devotee has that kind of conception, they are not, like, pure. In essence, like, you know, their sankalpa, their aim is not, like, you know, like, pure. A pure devotee surrenders everything to the Lord and accepts the Lord's will. Like, for example, Maharaj Parikshit, he did not protest. He was much, much more powerful than Sringi. And he can counter curse Sringi in a minute. He can say, like, you know, like, you burn to ashes just like right now. Within, like, as soon as he, like, you know, closes his mouth, before he closes his mouth, Sringi will, like, you know, burn into ashes. He was so powerful. But did he do that? No. He said, this is the plan of the Lord. I fully surrender to the Lord. Whatever circumstances He is going to be making in my life, I am going to be accepting it as the plan of the Lord. And I am going to accept this as the best possible scenario for me. So that is the complete faith. When somebody has the complete faith in the Lord, that's what they accept. Like, you know, they accept everything. So it is not that, oh, like, you know, this looks fine for me, so I will accept it. That doesn't look that good, so I don't accept that. It is not like that. Anything which the Lord arranges, a pure devotee knows, it is for my best. I might not be in a situation to understand whether this is the best or not, but I have 100% faith in the Lord that He is going to protect me. Any situation He is going to be presenting before me is for my best. So, I accept that. So, that was Maharaj Parikshit's mood. He just accepted the curse as the best benediction of the Lord. And then he took shelter. Like, you know, he wanted to hear more and more about, like, Lord Krishna. He did not say, like, you know, if something like that might have happened to me, then I don't think I will be going to, like, you know, devotees and, like, you know, can you please explain about, like, Lord Krishna's pastime? Probably, like, he might be saying, like, you know, my dear Kishore Kishori, what are you doing? Like, you know, I've been serving you, or to whatever capacity I can, I've been serving you. Now you are putting me in this particular situation. So whenever we have that kind of an attitude, we know that our intentions are not pure. So when our intentions are pure, what it means is that we fully surrender to the Lord, and we accept whatever the Lord provides as the best possible scenario, and we don't, like, you know, question the Lord in essence. In essence, we have, like, 100% faith in the Lord and His devotees and His messages. Like, there are, like, multiple definitions. This is, like, you know, probably the simplest. Yes, Prabhu.
No, Anya Abhilasha. You have serving Krishna.
Let's say if you are concentrated, they are not a God. They are not going to do anything bad for you. If I
Hare Krishna.
So before concluding, you said that it's not good to commit any kind of crime or any kind of, you know, bad activities against people, especially pure devotees, you know. So is there a distinction between pure devotees and not, in terms of committing any sinful act or crime against them? I mean, for example, if a person is not devotee and you commit something against the person, so you think that the bad karma or sin is not as much as compared to if it is, you know, acted against a pure devotee. So could you please clarify that part? Thank you.
So the one gets reaction based on the severity of their own action. For example, if killing is a great, like, you know, crime, if you are going to be, let's say, going outside the temple and removing the grass from the soil and throw it, actually, like, you are killing, right? You killed a living entity. The police is not going to come and arrest you. And if you are going to be, like, going out and cutting a tree, then probably, like, you know, police might, like, arrest you. So, like, you know, and if we kill somebody, then obviously, like, we are going to be, like, you know, put into prison, and the sentence is going to, like, much more, like, severe. Like that, always there is gradations. Offending somebody, irrespective of whether they are devotee or not a devotee, or pure devotee, or, like, you know, someone who has just started their Krishna consciousness, everything is going to have its effect. Good policy is not to offend anybody, irrespective of whether someone is a devotee or not a devotee. Because when we offend somebody, we have a particular mentality. Like, we think that, you know, like, we are better than others, or whatever it might be, whatever is the reason which caused us to offend that particular person. So that mentality is going to be carried on, like, you know, it will be carried forward. So we might be thinking, oh, like, you know, offending a non-devotee is fine, because the reactions are not that severe, so why not, like, you know, offend a non-devotee? So because that mentality is going to be carried forward in our own devotional service, then we will start to offend devotees.
So if you offend a devotee, especially a devotee, then the sin could be more versus if you offend a non-devotee. So that is what you said, actually. So that is the part what I wanted to clarify. So you are now saying that is the same thing, right? If you offend a devotee or a non-devotee.
So yes and no.
Okay, yes and no.
I am saying yes, okay. And also no.
Okay.
The two parts to it.
Right.
The mentality which causes us to offend somebody,
right,
is a big no-no. We should, as a practicing devotee, we should not cultivate that kind of mentality,
right,
because that is going to be detrimental to our own devotion, because it is a matter of time before we are going to be, like, you know, starting to offend a devotee, because, like, you know, That is the nature of that particular mentality. At the same time, there are also gradations of reaction. If we offend a non-devotee, the reaction we are going to be getting is going to be much less severe than offending a devotee. And if we offend a pure devotee, the reaction which we are going to be getting is going to be much greater. So that's why I gave an example of killing life is a sin, but you are going to be getting different kind of reactions based on the severity of that particular sin. Because when we offend a devotee, the Lord does not tolerate. If we offend the Lord directly, he tolerates that. But if we offend a devotee who is very, very dear to him, he doesn't tolerate. So that is the reason, then if the Lord is not favorable, then he is going to be taking away our taste for chanting the holy names or associating with devotees or reading the scriptures. So that is going to be hindering our path to devotional service. That's why offending devotees is called as atimatha, offense. It is like a mad elephant offense. So when you have a mad elephant, it goes and destroys everything. Similarly, when we commit offense against devotees, it is going to be destroying the further progress of our own devotional service. That's why we need to be very, very careful. But at the same time, he doesn't give us the we shouldn't take this in a way that it is okay for me to offend non-devotees. We will get reaction irrespective whether we are offending even a complete materialist. If we offend that person, we will get reaction. That is based on the law of karma. So it doesn't matter whether you are the president of the country or you are a local citizen. If you are going to be running the red light, you will get a ticket. Anyways, if the system works properly. But in Kali Yuga, most of the times the system doesn't work properly. So that is...
So to summarize, you're saying that the intensity could be different. I mean, yes. Devotee versus non-devotee. And yes. The Lord could be discriminatory in that from that perspective.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, exactly. Okay, thank you so much.
That was the last question.
Oh, okay. Yes, Mataji. Last question. Sorry.
I had that question, but it mostly got answered. I had that question that if somebody is really fallen, the momentum of his sins from past lives carries on to other lives, and so he will not be able to he will have anarthas in his heart for not surrendering to God. But then you answered that God would probably bring him to a position where he can clear the anarthas from the heart. And then another question that I had was what he asked was how do we know if a person is a devotee or not, because there is Paramatma in the heart. Krishna is, or whatever name we give to God, he is present in everyone's heart. And so a person who is listening to his heart and has Paramatma guiding him might not necessarily come to the temple and pay his obeisances, but he is listening to his conscience, the Paramatma within him, and he might be a bigger devotee than a person who's coming to the temple and paying his obeisances. But like you said, that God is discriminatory, and so he will punish. So I do not know that much, but that was just a thought that a person who might consider that this person is a materialist, but in his own conscience, in his own heart, he has always tried to follow the right path, the truth. So it doesn't matter whether he is coming to the temple or not coming, he is still in touch with the Paramatma within the heart. So that was my thing.
Yeah, thank you, Mataji. So first, let me address the second question. So, scriptures
teaches us that like we need to be like very very careful when we deal with like anybody for the same point like which you are like making. If you look at like one of the immediate thing like which becomes very apparent when we read scriptures is that how compassionate the scriptures are. The scriptures are so compassionate because the Lord by nature he is very compassionate. So that's why like if you see scriptures, there are like only like some scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam, they only like talk about pure devotional service. But there are a lot of Vedic scriptures, they talk about like in a sense gratification, but a sense gratification from a like in a religious sense gratification in essence. Because the scriptures are so merciful, they want to bring even the person who is at the lowest category, instead of saying that, oh, like, you know, you are like, you know, useless, don't even like come to me. They like, let's say if somebody wants to eat meat or something like that, then the scriptures say, okay, you can eat meat, but you need to fulfill condition A, B and C, and you chant these mantras and you only eat on this particular day or like that. It puts restriction. Instead of having unrestricted sense enjoyment, the person is going to be having religious sense gratification. That is going to be, in a sense, like, you know, this person is taking some, undergoing some austerity. The power of the austerity is that it is going to be purifying the person. As they get purified, then they will be elevated to the next level. Now somebody is like eating meat, maybe so much meat, then they reduce the meat, and then maybe they will give up eating meat, and so on and so forth. The scriptures are so merciful in nature. They try to bring each and every person to the next level, to the next level, to the next level, and next level. That's why if you look at in scriptures many times, even somebody who is not following bhakti yoga, scriptures call them as devotees. Even if somebody is just like, you know, like following like karma kanda or like karma yoga or whatever it might be, often generally they called as devotees because they are in the path of like, you know, devotional service. Because the power of devotional service is that as somebody is getting like more and more purified, they will like, you know, get to the success. But they are at the lowest rung of the ladder. So the same thing like applies to like us as practicing devotees. We might say that, okay, like, you know, this devotee who came to the temple just today, so not a very advanced devotee, and this devotee had been practicing for the last 30 years chanting and so on and so forth, maybe this is a better devotee. So we should not make that kind of like, you know, like discrimination, because we don't know what is the background of that person. So many times we see in the lives of devotees that somebody might be looking as if they don't know what they are doing or whatever it might be, and then all of a sudden something changed in their life. Within a fraction of a second, like, you know, next time you see them, their life will be changed upside down. They will be chanting not just like, you know, the minimum 16 rounds, they will be chanting like much more, and they are like powerful preacher and like an impeccable character. Everything is there. How come? Because they are starting from wherever they left off, from the previous lifetime. So we cannot judge a person based on whatever circumstances they are like, you know, in right now, because that can change. But at the same time, scriptures also teaches us, like in the Nectar of Instruction, teaches us that we need to discriminate, in the sense that we need to be able to differentiate different grades of devotees. Because the way we associate with the devotees is based on their own characteristics, at what level they are in.
If someone is a Kanishtha Adhikari, the way we associate with them is very different than us associating with an Uttama Adhikari. So there are like, you know, different levels of devotees, and we associate with them in different like manner. So from that perspective, it is important for us to understand at what level different devotees are. But we should not discriminate based on, okay, like, you know, this person is a Kanishtha Adhikari, let me like offend this person, or it is not like that. So we discriminate to maximize like our own association with that person, so that we get the full benefit out of that particular association. So we should never like, you know, like insult or like offend like, you know, anybody. It doesn't matter like, you know, like at what stage they are in, because in some places in the scriptures it is mentioned that even a person who chanted the name of the Lord like once, even like, you know, someone who just started that devotional service, they are called as pure devotees. They are called as pure devotees. Why? Are they pure devotees yet? No. But will they become pure devotees? Absolutely yes. Why? Because the pure devotional service is very, very powerful. Pure devotional service is so powerful, the success is guaranteed. The success is guaranteed. I don't recall the particular verse. In one of the verses, pure devotional service is compared to the like river water in a hilly area after like torrential rainfall. After a torrential rainfall, like, you know, there is a hill, and if you are going to be getting like in the water in this river, it is going to be having so much of force. It is going to be having so much of force. So any object which falls into that water, that river water, it is going to come out only like when it merged into the ocean. It is not going to be like, you know, like coming like out. So that is the power of pure devotional service. So even somebody who started their devotional service, they might not become pure devotee in that particular lifetime. Only thing which is differentiating is when they are going to become a pure devotee. A person might become a pure devotee within a fraction of a second, or for another person it might take several billion of lifetimes. Because the Lord guarantees that anything which we, any devotional service we rendered is going to be preserved. So we are going to be starting off from the next lifetime, wherever we left off. And now, because of the power of that devotion, our motivation, our inclination to start our devotional service is going to become stronger. And wherever we left off in that lifetime, the next lifetime, our strength and inclination to continue with the devotional service is going to become stronger. So in essence, it is going to become stronger and stronger and stronger. It is just the snowball effect. Like, in, like we might have from the top of the mountain, little bit of snow, like in, like balling, and it is like coming down. As it comes down, it is going to be accumulating like more and more and more mass. It is going to become so large. It is going to have a lot of momentum. Even if we want to stop, we cannot stop. So right now, for a lot of us, like we are so materially conditioned, even though we might want to stop, let's say, a particular like, you know, bad activity, because of the conditioned nature, we might not be able to stop that. Similarly, for a person who is properly following devotional service, because the power of devotion is so strong, the momentum is so strong, even if they want to move out of, like, you know, like from the association of the devotees, or like, you know, I don't want to come and take darshan of the deities or whatever it is, still they will not be able to do that. So that is the power of like devotion. Because of that, we should not like underestimate like any devotees, because they will become like, you know, like pure devotees one day. It is because of the like mercy of the Lord. It is because of the potency of pure devotion. But that being said, we need to be like very, very careful. It is not often like, you know, whenever we read these kind of like messages from the scriptures, we can take it from different perspective. One is that, wow, like, you know, pure devotional service is so merciful, and like, you know, like, we, our success is guaranteed. And another approach is like, you know, lackadaisical, thinking that, oh, okay, whatever I do, it is fine, because I'm going to be becoming a pure devotee, like, you know, like, sometime. So it is fine, like, you know, let me do whatever nonsense I want to do right now, because I know that I'm going to be becoming a pure devotee one day. That is not going to work that well, because, again, like, you know, we talked about the mentality. So this kind of mentality is not good, because this mentality is going to be a breeding ground for offenses. And once we start committing offenses, then everything is going to be, like, you know, destroyed. Of course, like, you know, it is going to destroy the appearance of bhakti. Even offenses, they cannot destroy bhakti itself, but it is going to be destroying the appearance of the bhakti. In essence, we will not be able to practice it, like, further. But whatever we did before, it is still, like, preserved because of the promise made by, like, the Lord. So we need to be, like, very, very, like, careful. Is that okay, Mataji? Okay. Okay, we are already at 8:51, so we will stop here. Thank you so much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Granth Rashi Mad Bhagavatam ki jai.